To the passionate strains of the love duet between the love-struck Des Grieux and his beloved Manon Lescaut, we welcome you to this edition of In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia.
The place to learn everything you need to know about upcoming opera company productions and more.
I'm Mike Bolton.
And I'm Marin Montalbano. Thanks for joining us. What a great opera to end the Opera Company's 2011-12 season in the Academy of Music. And it's amazing because the last time this opera was seen here on the Academy stage was 1985.
So many years ago. You know what? And I think Puccini fans in particular couldn't be happier to have opera's own material girl in the city of brotherly love.
Right. Manon Lescaut is the story of a beautiful young woman and her downward spiral, and is perfect for the young Puccini to set to music. You know, it was the opera that made the world sit up and notice Puccini as the next important Italian composer. Similarly, the Opera Company of Philadelphia has a long tradition of providing great opportunities for the world to notice up-and-coming singers. So, for example, Juan Diego Flores, Stephanie Blythe, Denise Graves, Nathan Gunn, Patricia Racette made groundbreaking career debuts with the Opera Company early in their U.S. careers. And with this production, we have a young singer making her OCP debut in the title role.
You know, we'll tell you not just about our cast and the glorious production during this podcast, but as normal, we'll have a full plot synopsis, background information on Puccini and his five librettists, musical excerpts performed by such legendary singers as Enrico Caruso, and much, much more. So stick around and stay tuned for more In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia.
Puccini's Manon Lescaut is an opera about a beautiful young girl seduced by riches that trigger her downfall, but ultimately finding redemption in Des Grieux's love for her. Puccini's gorgeous, swelling melodies permeate the opera, from Manon's poignant arias to the lush orchestral score. In the title role, Metropolitan Opera National Council audition winner Michelle Johnson makes her eagerly anticipated Opera Company of Philadelphia debut. Tenor Tiago Arancum, who starred in the 2011 OCP production of Tosca, returns as Manon's true love, Des Grieux. Maestro Rivaris leads the Opera Company Orchestra in a stylized production directed by Michael Cavanaugh and featuring lush period costumes from the Washington National Opera. Performances of Manon Lescaut run from April 20th through the 29th at the Academy of Music. Tickets are available online at operaphila.org or by calling 215-893-1018. That's 215-893-1018. The Opera Company of Philadelphia is proud to partner with New York's Gotham Chamber Opera and Music Theater Group in the co-commission and co-production of Dark Sisters, a new American opera with music by Nico Muley and a libretto by Stephen Karam. Set against a red-earthed landscape filled with revelations, Dark Sisters charts one woman's quest for self-discovery in a world where personal identity is forbidden. An incredible ensemble of strong female stars headline the production: Caitlin Lynch, Jennifer Zetlin, Eve Gigliotti, Margaret Lattimore, and Jennifer Check. Award-winning Broadway director Rebecca Teichman stages this new work, with Gotham music director Neil Gorin conducting. Performances are part of the Aurora Series Chamber Opera at the Perelman Theater and are underwritten by the Wincote Foundation. Five performances only from Friday, June 8th through Sunday, June 17th. Tickets are available online at operaphila.org or by calling 215-893-1018. That's 215-893-1018.
Welcome back to In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. I'm Marin Montalbano. Most opera composers don't hit it out of the ballpark on their first try. Verdi, Wagner, Mozart, and others didn't achieve true success until their third or fourth opera. Puccini was no exception. After a few false starts, Puccini didn't win acclaim until his third opera, Manon Lescaut. OCP's Michael Bolton tells about Puccini's struggle for operatic success and bringing his own vision of Manon Lescaut to the stage.
At 17, Puccini and his brother Michele walked 18 and a half miles to see the local premiere of Verdi's Aida in Pisa, he became so inspired by that performance that he decided to become an opera composer. In 1880, with the help of a relative and a grant, Puccini enrolled in the Milan Conservatory to study composition with composer Amilcare Ponchielli, composer of La Gioconda, Antonio Bazzini, and many others. And while at the conservatory, Puccini entered a one-act opera competition in 1882 with the opera Le Villi. While it didn't win, it was later staged at the Teatro dal Verme, and it caught the attention of Giulio Ricordi, who was the head of the Ricordi & Company music publishers. Ricordi then commissioned a second opera, Edgar, from Puccini in 1889. It still failed, and Edgar nearly cost Puccini his career. One of the challenges with Puccini was his personal life. He ran off with his married girlfriend, Elvira Geminiani, and her son. Ricordi's associates weren't so willing to turn the blind eye to his lifestyle. The Ricordi folks wanted to drop Puccini after Edgar failed, but Giulio Ricordi had faith in Puccini. He himself would give him an allowance from his own pocket for his next opera, Manon Lescaut. Ricordi wasn't so thrilled with Puccini's choice of the opera and thought it was bad form for Puccini to go head-to-head with Massenet, who had a wildly successful Manon opera, which had premiered in 1884. It would have been very presumptuous and disrespectful of Puccini to compose an opera from the same source material. But Puccini said, "Manon is a heroine I believe in, and therefore she cannot fail to win the hearts of the public. Why shouldn't there be two operas about Manon? A woman like Manon can have more than one lover." He said, "Massenet feels Manon as a Frenchman, with powder and minuets. I shall feel it as an Italian, with desperate passion." Ricordi tried to divert Puccini's idea of writing his own libretto and asked that he work with writer Ruggero Leoncavallo, who would go on to his own success as the composer of Pagliacci only a few years later. Puccini wasn't really thrilled with what Leoncavallo had done and asked that he be removed from the project. Four other librettists were then involved with the opera in one phase or another. Puccini was constantly changing his mind about the structure of the piece, which added to the confusion, and it was almost by accident that the final two librettists, Illica and Giacosa, came together to complete the opera. The collaboration was so successful that Puccini would work with them for his next three operas, La Bohème, Tosca, and Madama Butterfly. Manon Lescaut was finished in 1892. It had taken Puccini 3 years to write, and the first performance took place at the Teatro Regio in Turin in 1893. Manon Lescaut was Puccini's third opera and his first great success, premiering just 8 days before the premiere of Verdi's last opera, Falstaff, in Milan. Critics were abuzz about Manon Lescaut. Here, on the eve of Verdi's final opera, was Verdi's successor. Puccini was hailed as the next king of Italian opera.
Up next, we'll get reacquainted with Manon Lescaut's plot, hear about some exciting news surrounding the production that you won't want to miss, and more. We'll be right back.
The Opera Company of Philadelphia is pleased to announce the 2012-2013 season, featuring 5 new productions of beloved classics and important new works at the Academy of Music and the Perelman Theater. The Opera at the Academy season opens with director Davide Livermore's romantic La Bohème, inspired by the Impressionist art at the turn of the 20th century. And in spring 2013, director Robert B. Driver directs The Magic Flute in a lush and contemporary rainforest setting. In February, the Opera Company is proud to produce the East Coast premiere of the critically acclaimed new opera Silent Night by composer Kevin Putz and librettist Mark Campbell, which recounts a miraculous moment of peace during one of the bloodiest wars in human history. The popular Aurora series for chamber opera at the Perelman Theatre returns with 2 contrasting contemporary British works, Benjamin Britten's Owen Wingrave, produced by the Curtis Opera Theatre in association with OCP and Kimmel Center Presents, and the Opera Company of Philadelphia premiere of Powder Her Face by Thomas Adès. For complete information on the season or to order tickets, visit operaphila.org or call 215-732-8400.
Alan, do you have the tickets for the opera?
Yeah, they're around here somewhere.
Oh my gosh, you should find that because we have to find out which opera we're going to go see.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, I don't really know what any of them are about.
Well, my friend Anne told me about opera overtures, which happen an hour before every opera. That's a great way to garner information about what opera we're going to go see. The opera, the plot, the music, the composer,
so I'll have some idea about what it's about before I actually sit down to see it.
Exactly.
Opera overtures.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like it would make it a lot more fun.
Sometimes it does.
Opera overtures, brought to you by the magic of Macy's. 1 hour before every performance in the Academy of Music and the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts.
Hi, this is Mike Bolton, and you're listening to In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. To put the opera in context, it's 1720 in France, 50 years before the American Revolution, and almost 80 years before the Louisiana Purchase. King Louis XV reigns as monarch in France. The opera begins with a brilliant burst from the orchestra as Puccini sets the scene with the busy sounds of passersby and lots of local color. We're in a large public square near the Paris Gate at Amiens, outside an inn, and it's a gorgeous summer evening. The square is filled with young men and women strolling, townspeople and soldiers, and of course some gambling and drinking are taking place as well. The young Edmondo comes in with some of the other students. His friend, the young Renato de Grieux, soon joins them, but he's in a bit of a sour mood. He's cynical about love and says he knows nothing about it. So he sings to a group of girls mockingly, asking if any of them can capture his love. The crowd is excited by the arrival of a carriage. The passengers are disembarked, and among them are a beautiful young woman, her brother, and the rich treasure general, Geronte. Des Grieux is enchanted by the beauty, and when she is left alone by her brother, he approaches her. Des Grieux confesses that he's drawn to her, and she says her name is Manon Lescaut. She's there following her father's orders on her way to enter the convent. Manon's brother Lescaut calls out to her, but before she departs, Manon and Des Grieux make plans to see each other later that night. Overwhelmed by this young woman, Des Grieux sings that he has never seen a woman quite like her in the aria Donna non vidi mai. Here's Enrico Caruso to sing Des Grieux's aria in a recording from 1913. Lescaut comes back with Géronte, who is also charmed by Manon. Lescaut joins a group who is gambling along the side of the square. The old Géronte decides to run away with Manon as her brother is swept up in cards. He tells the innkeeper he'll need horses and a carriage in an hour, but that he mustn't tell anyone if he happens to see a man and a young woman flee in a carriage. Edmondo overhears Géronte's plans and suggests to Des Grieux that he should take advantage of the situation and run away with Manon himself. Manon and Des Grieux meet again in the square as planned. Des Grieux convinces her of his love for her and to forget the veil. They should run away to Paris. Swept up in the moment, the two run off in the carriage. Lescaut and Géronte come into the square. Edmondo tells Géronte that Manon has fled with the young student. Shocked by the turn of events, Géronte insists that Lescaut follow his sister. Manon can wait until morning. Manon loves the luxurious life, and she'll be easy to pry away from a poor student. Before Act Two begins, things go as Lescaut had predicted. Des Grieux has no money, and tired of being poor, Manon leaves him for the rich Géronte. When the curtain opens on Act Two, we find Manon in her gorgeously lavish apartments in Géronte's home in Paris, where Manon is living as his mistress. Manon is waited on hand and foot by the servants, of whom she is very demanding. She has everything she wants and needs, and is far from the shy young woman we met in Act One. Her brother Lescaut arrives and congratulates his sister's alliance with Géronte. Manon may be beautiful and be surrounded by beautiful things, but in the aria In quelle trine morbide, she says she's empty inside and remarks on the chill of her new life. She regrets leaving Des Grieux without even saying goodbye to him, and she can't stop thinking about him. Singers now enter, and they sing a madrigal in praise of Manon's beauty, written by Géronte. The singers bow and find their way out, and Lescaut follows them and is off to find Des Grieux. Géronte enters with a dancing master, musicians, and friends. Still, Manon can't bear any of these people any longer and is bored by them all. Géronte suggests that Manon join him on a stroll along the boulevard later. He kisses her hand and leaves with his retinue. Alone, Manon prepares for the boulevard, saying that she will be the most beautiful one there. Des Grieux suddenly appears, much to Manon's surprise. She wonders if he still loves her and if he will ever cover her in kisses and hold her in his arms again. A passionate, all-consuming duet continues as Des Grieux declares his love for Manon. Thank you.
Barely have they finished embracing when Geronte surprises them. Is this who Manon wants to be with? Geronte reminds Manon of all the gifts he has given her. Manon declares that she will never love him. Geronte goes to leave and warns them that they will meet again very soon. Des Grieux and Manon are overwhelmed that they are together again and decide to leave. Unwilling to give up her life of luxury, Manon cannot leave her beautiful jewelry and dresses. Lescaut rushes in and tells them that Geronte has denounced Manon and is coming back with guards. Unable to give up her trinkets, Manon grabs as many of her jewels as possible. Just as they are about to make their escape, Manon screams as soldiers burst into the room with Geronte. Trying to escape, Manon drops the jewels, and the soldiers arrest her for theft and immorality and drag her away to prison. Des Grieux does everything in his power to have Manon released from prison, but it is to no avail. He goes to join her at Le Havre. When the third act opens, it's dawn on the square near the harbor. A man of war ship is visible. Manon is locked in prison with courtesans. Des Grieux and Lescaut have come to be near her. Lescaut bribes a sentinel to allow Des Grieux and Manon to see each other. Manon appears at the window and is overjoyed at seeing Des Grieux. She is to be sent to America. They attempt a rescue, but distant gunshots foil their attempt. A guard begins to announce the women who are to be sent to America, and the crowd comments on each one of them. When Manon comes from the prison on her way to the ship, Des Grieux tries to join her, but he's pushed away by the sergeant. The captain takes pity on him and allows him to join them on their trip to America. Manon and Des Grieux arrive in America, and when the curtain goes up on Act 4, we see the couple struggling as they make their way across the desert in Louisiana. The sky is overcast as night falls. Both are worn out from exhaustion, and their clothes are in tatters. Manon is in very poor condition and leans on Des Grieux just to stay up. They're desperate for water, food, and shelter. Manon is dying, and Des Grieux is racked with guilt and despair. They find a place for her to lie down and rest, as Des Grieux goes looking for water. He leaves Manon alone, lost, and abandoned, as she sings terrified that she does not want to die in the aria, Sola perduta abbandonata. Oh! Unable to find water, Des Goyeux returns. Manon is dying, and with heartfelt passion, she declares her love for Des Goyeux, who falls senseless on her body.
We are thankful to our friends at the Allegro Music Group for allowing us to use excerpts from their recording of Manon Lescaut on the Opera Duro label, featuring Licia Albanese, UC Burling, under the direction of Yonel Pelea. That's Opera Duro, catalog number 1428. This recording is available on various online retailers, but also at allegro-music.com.
That was OCP's Mike Bolton giving us the lowdown on Manon Lescaut's plot. Up next, we'll learn a little bit about this beautiful production, the exciting cast, and more. We'll be right back.
Puccini's Manon Lescaut is an opera about a beautiful young girl seduced by riches that trigger her downfall, but ultimately finding redemption in Des Grieux's love for her. Puccini's gorgeous, swelling melodies permeate the opera, from Manon's poignant arias to the lush orchestral score. In the title role, Metropolitan Opera National Council audition winner Michelle Johnson makes her eagerly anticipated Opera Company of Philadelphia debut. Tenor Tiago Arancum, who starred in the 2011 OCP production of Tosca, returns as Manon's true love, Des Grieux. Maestro Rivaris leads the Opera Company Orchestra in a stylized production directed by Michael Cavanaugh and featuring lush period costumes from the Washington National Opera. Performances of Manon Lescaut run from April 20th through the 29th at the Academy of Music. Tickets are available online at operafilla.org or by calling 215-893-1018. That's 215-893-1018. The Opera Company of Philadelphia is pleased to announce the 2012-2013 season, featuring five new productions of beloved classics and important new works at the Academy of Music and the Perelman Theater. The Opera at the Academy season opens with director Davide Livermore's romantic La Bohème, inspired by the Impressionist art at the turn of the 20th century. And in spring 2013, director Robert B. Driver directs The Magic Flute in a lush and contemporary rainforest setting. In February, the Opera Company is proud to produce the East Coast premiere of the critically acclaimed new opera Silent Night by composer Kevin Putz and librettist Mark Campbell, which recounts a miraculous moment of peace during one of the bloodiest wars in human history. The popular Aurora series for chamber opera at the Perelman Theatre returns with two contrasting contemporary British works, Benjamin Britten's Owen Wingrave, produced by the Curtis Opera Theatre in association with OCP and Kimmel Center Presents, and the Opera Company of Philadelphia premiere of Powder Her Face by Thomas Adès. For complete information on the season or to order tickets, visit operafilla.org or call 215-732-8400.
Hi, this is Maren Montalbano.
And this is Mike Bolton.
And you're listening to In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. Hey, Mike, I have a story to tell you.
Okay.
Okay, it's about this extraordinarily beautiful young woman who sort of makes a lot of bad choices, mm-hmm. but she's beloved by a lot of people, and it's part of her fame kind of makes her think that she's the center of the universe.
I wonder who you're talking about.
Yeah, oh, you think I'm talking about Manon Lescaut, mm-hmm. but I'm actually not. I'm talking about Britney Spears.
Okay.
So, it's interesting. I kind of feel like one of the things that makes this story so relevant in today's society is that there are stories like this happening all over the mm-hmm. place. We have watched Britney's...
Up and down and
right,
all over the place.
Exactly. On tabloids, and everybody's fascinated by that. The same kind of stuff happens in this opera. Mm-hmm. Manon and Des Grieux, they have all this passion, but it's this dysfunctional relationship. She is really motivated by money. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that means that her love is going to kind of take a back seat sometimes. And that happens today. That happens to normal people, but it also happens very prominently to
whoever the celebrity is.
Exactly. You know, it's kind of interesting the way that she also manipulates her other lovers, like mm-hmm. Geronte. Mm-hmm. She kind of She lets him down, but in a sort of a teasing way that humiliates him and makes him want to deport her to New Orleans.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's for her, it's a game, like, oops, I did it again. Back to the Britney thing. But obviously it has real world consequences. Mm-hmm. And these things happen. They happen all the time today.
Couldn't agree with you more. And all sorts of celebrities, there are probably 10 different starlets this could apply to. It's a great analogy and something that I brought up with my teachers in our Sounds of Learning program as the hook for their kids to kind of get engaged with this piece. You know, we always try to make real world references to make these operas relevant for students. And it's a perfect, perfect example.
Yeah.
So up next, after this quick little break, we'll talk a little bit about our production, learn more about our cast, and some other stuff as well. So stay tuned right after this.
The Opera Company of Philadelphia offers all sorts of ways to learn about its season and productions. Do you like free preview recitals? Then come to A Taste of Opera at Moore College of Art and Design. Like informative pre-curtain talks? Then check out Opera Overtures, held 1 hour before each opera. Here's what people are saying about the Opera Company of Philadelphia's free outreach program.
Opera overtures are an enormous help in appreciating the overall productions. I've enjoyed every one I've been to.
Absolutely illuminating, fun, interesting backstories that are wonderful.
It's enjoyable and it's always educational and very fun.
And I love Taste of Opera. It gives me my fix and my high for the whole week, and it keeps me glowing. I recommend it to everybody, and if you have never gone to an opera before, this is a great introduction.
What are you waiting for? Come join us and bring a friend. Find out more about Opera Company of Philadelphia's educational and outreach events online at operaphila.org.
Welcome back to In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. I'm Mike Bolton.
As we mentioned at the top of the podcast, it's been quite a while since the Opera Company has produced Puccini's early hit, over 25 years. So it's not an opera that gets produced frequently, partially because the protagonists are among the most difficult roles to cast in all of opera, particularly that of Des Glieux.
Absolutely. It's such a ridiculously high role and such a passionate role. And joining us as Des Glieux is the Brazilian-Italian tenor Tiago Arancam, who starred as Cavaradossi in last season's production of Puccini's Tosca. And the Chestnut Hill local said that, quote, tenor Tiago Arancam was a dramatic stunner and vocal wonder as the lover Mario Cavaradossi. Now, he's been singing all around the world, and we're thrilled to have him back again.
And the other three gentlemen in the cast are baritone Troy Cook as Lisco, whom we've seen as Sharpless in Madama Butterfly, Marcello in La Boheme. That's a role he's going to repeat next season in Philadelphia.
Also returning as the rich older gentleman, Geronte, is Daniel Mobbs. Well, last season, of course, he was in our production of Tosca as Angelotti, and some of his recent assignments include the title role in Rossini's Guillaume Tell, William Tell, at the much-admired Caramore Festival. He's done Don Pedro in Meyerbeer's also rarely heard L'Africain at the Opera Orchestra of New York, among many, many other recent assignments. And as Des Glieux's friend Edmondo, we'll hear another up-and-coming singer, tenor Cody Austin. He appeared in our production of Otello last season as Rodrigo.
And now joining them in the title role, soprano Michelle Johnson. Ms. Johnson is a 2011 Grand Prize winner of the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions.
Wow.
Her winning performance last year at the Met had the New York Times declaring that, quote, Ms. Johnson seems to have the vocal goods as well as the star power.
You know, the Opera Company has a long history of providing up-and-coming singers with opportunities to sing important roles, and Ms. Johnson will be making her OCP debut and role debut in these performances. We are thrilled for this opportunity for Michelle. And you know what? If you haven't heard her sing, there are a couple of clips on YouTube, and we pulled some audio of Michelle singing via YouTube. And here's a little bit of Chilea's aria, Io son l'umile ancella, from Adriana Lecouvreur.
Yeah.
There's been a palpable excitement in the rehearsals and in the office about Michelle. And so we're all incredibly thrilled for her. Mm-hmm. And we know that you're going to be thrilled with her as well.
Yes.
Rounding out the cast are students and alums from the Curtis Institute of Music and AVA in a variety of roles, including the stunning young mezzo-soprano Janae Bridges as the madrigalist. Janae recently was named the winner of the 2012 Marian Anderson Award. Notable former recipients of the prize include Denise Graves, Patricia Rosette, Nathan Gunn, Eric Owens, and Lawrence Brownlee, among others.
The physical production of Manolisco is a classic traditional production that was built by Washington National Opera and features designs by John Pasco. Now, you may remember Mr. Pasco's sumptuous production of David de Chiara's Cyrano, which the Opera Company of Philadelphia co-commissioned with Michigan Opera Theater in 2007. And his designs have been seen all over the world.
This sounds like a production that nobody's going to want to miss. So, if you want to buy tickets, and believe me, they will sell out fast, you can purchase them online at operaphila.org or by calling 215-893-1018. That's it for this edition of In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia. Special thanks to everyone who participated and lent their voices to this, including Julianne Green, Jessica Kaczynski, Elizabeth Larson-Silva, and Steve Williamson.
Special thanks as well to New World Radio, WNWR, for allowing us to record in their studios in Bala Cynwyd. In Tune with the Opera Company of Philadelphia is produced by yours truly.
And be sure to check out our other podcasts on this season's operas. If you have any questions or comments, please send them via email to outreach@operaphila.org. That's outreach@operaphila.org. And if you want to tweet me, I'm at Supermarin, or you can also tweet with the Opera Company of Philadelphia, which is Opera Phila. So thank you again for joining us. I'm Marin Montalbano.
And I'm Mike Bolton. We hope to see you at the opera.